Welcome to the latest episode of Microbrew. It's Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and with us today is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is going to be at American Family Field this week for a huge series. You know, as huge as June gets anyway. The St. Louis Cardinals are coming to town, four games. The two teams come into the series tied for first place in the National League Central, and everybody's sending their best pitchers to the hill. It'll be Corbin Burnes versus Miles Mikolas on Monday to kick things off. Mikolas came within one out of a no-hitter last time. Corbin Burnes is Corbin Burnes. So it's going to be a good show as the Brewers try to regain their foothold atop the NL Central. They had a good week. They won four of six games. Granted, the three-game sweep against the Cincinnati Reds, they seem to do really well against these teams that are below 500. There is a lot to discuss. I've got an interview with Vinny Rotino coming up at the back half of this episode. We talked to the draft a little bit. He follows it pretty closely. That's coming up. We talked about the 2007 season because he played a key role in a game that I wanted to ask him about at the end of that season 15 years ago this year. We talked about his role on Bally Sports Wisconsin. So a lot with him. And we have to talk about Lorenzo Cain, Todd. We got a lot to talk about. So we'll just start kind of off the top. I wonder how you feel about the Brewers. They're out of the funk, the eight-game losing streak funk. But again, the wins are coming against the Reds, and they were competitive against the Mets. Could have taken two of three. But I don't know if anything has changed in your mind. If you feel like they have discovered something, how sort of you place them right now? They still got injuries. They still got issues. But where do you think they are right now?
First things first, did you take a breath and all that?
I didn't, but I did right after pausing, so now I am fully oxygenated. Thank you for asking.
All right, good. That was a lot there. How do I feel about the Brewers? I feel like they have righted the ship, I would say, for the most part. I wouldn't say that they're back to clicking on all cylinders by any means, but, with the offense, obviously hitting homers is key for them, and they hit a number of those this weekend in Cincinnati. They swept a series without Josh Hader, which is always a good thing when you're out without your closer. You had other guys step in and pick up the slack there. The pitching was good enough, I would say. The bullpen's been really good. Starting pitching has been good enough. Adrian Hauser today, we're recording this on Sunday night, had a kind of a rough start, but rallied and at least got through six innings to help that bullpen out a little bit. So I would say overall, just getting on the right side of that losing streak and kind of righting the ship a little bit. They're still, doing without Colton Wong. So another injured player out. Brandon Woodruff, it looks like he's nearing a return to the rotation, which is a good thing. So a lot of moving pieces, a lot of things going on. The DFA of Lorenzo Cain. So. This is the last three-city road trip of the season for the Brewers, fortunately for them. So they'll have a little bit easier go of it the rest of the way. And the back end of the slate is much more packed with home games, which is a great thing for them in September and then that early October. So, just kind of going on, but at least in a much better position with that big series starting on Monday against the Cardinals.
Yeah, excellent point about Josh Hader. I mean, Devin Williams and Brad Boxberger. Boxberger with a big escape in Cincinnati on Friday night. The bullpen has done the job really well. And like you said, it's hard. Everything gets shuffled when you know the Hader isn't available, taking some paternity leave. But presumably he'll be back this week, and that'll be a big thing with some big games coming up. The Cardinals, the Blue Jays, one of the best teams in the American League, ostensibly one of the best teams in the AL coming to town. Then they go to Tampa. So it's going to be an interesting stretch. You mentioned Adrian Hauser on Sunday. And again, I want to talk about Lorenzo Cain. We will. But while Adrian Hauser is fresh in my mind, he's got a 4.24 ERA this year, 1.43 whip. This is a kind of a microcosm of his season. He was fine. He was coasting along. And then he walked three guys in an inning at the bottom of the Reds order, allowed a couple hard hit balls, allowed three runs, and then rebounded and kind of finished strong too. Like, I don't really know what to make of him. I feel like, and this is just my anecdotal impression, he is as reliant as anybody around good defense behind him. If the defense takes care of things, gets those ground balls, turns them into outs, he's going to be effective. I don't think he's very different from who he was in past years, but the results might not always be there because I think they're just dependent on the defense a lot. Tell me what you think about him, what your impression is of him, because presumably some of these guys are going to get healthy in the rotation, and they're going to have to make decisions about who's going to get those starts. I think Adrian Hauser is still one of those guys, but I don't know. What do you think of him?
Yeah, I don't think that he's done anything to all of a sudden be in jeopardy of losing his spot in the rotation. Not by any means, but at the same time, I think most people would agree that he just has not been quite as sharp as he was last year. I've seen a lot of people on social media positing that, you know, since the arbitration hearing didn't go his way, things have kind of gone south. And if you look at the numbers, there is kind of an interesting correlation there. But, Adrian Hauser, just for whatever reason and over the course of his tenure as a starter, has gone through rough patches and rough streaks. And that's probably not unlike most pitchers, but his seemed to be a little bit more extreme. He goes through lengthier periods where he loses command, is just more hittable. And then, like you mentioned, you throw in the fact that he does rely on his defense. And let's be honest, the Brewers' defense has been very spotty this season at best. So if he's not getting those ground balls consistently, that's bad for him. If he's getting the ground balls consistently and the defense behind them isn't scooping them up and throwing them out at first base or whatever, that's obviously a bad sign too. So I would take Sunday's start in Cincinnati as a good sign. He did have that rough stretch early in the game, but recovered, got to throw around 100 pitches, which is good. And if you're the Brewers and Adrian Hauser, obviously you hope that he continues along that path and is able to be that, you know, not that sexy guy like Corbin Burns or Brandon Woodruff, but really kind of the unsung hero, just that guy that's going to go out and get you 5 to 6 every start, not necessarily strike out a bunch of guys. That's not his game anyway, but just get the job done in some way, shape, or form. So good sign from him. And I think obviously the Brewers are in addition to getting Brandon Woodruff back, hopefully Aaron Ashby, it looks like he's going to be making his next start as scheduled after having a little bit of forearm tightness too. So again, the health is a big thing, and especially when it comes to their starting rotation.
Yeah, and you mentioned Colton Wong, too, had a setback this week, so we don't know for sure when he's coming back. Woodruff, maybe later this week, early next week, I guess. It doesn't necessarily look like that's a done deal yet, but yeah, they could still stand to get quite a bit healthier. Another guy I want to ask you about real quick is Willy Adames. You know, it seems like he's coming up big in every spot. He homered in 2 of the 3 Reds games. Titanic blasts. It seems like he's been their guy, you know, sharing the team lead in home runs. And yet you look up and his stats are actually pretty bad. A batting average just above 200, an on-base average well below 300. But that's just not how it feels. It feels like things are more settled with him in there. I know he's had some injury stuff, so it's hard to judge him kind of as a complete, you know, a complete picture this year. But I guess when you think of Willy Adames, do you think he's one of the best players on this team, or do you think he's struggling as bad as anybody else? It's kind of, to me, it's sort of enigmatic when you look at his statistics.
Yeah, actually, before we started this, I called up the averages and was just kind of scanning through them. You know, you look at the two guys who are leading the team in home runs, Willy Adames, Hunter Renfroe with 13 apiece. Willie has 33 RBI, Hunter Renfroe 27. Willy Adames with a 281 on base percentage, Hunter Renfroe 298. Yikes. That's not great, but I do give him a bit of a pass with the injury stuff, both being on the IL. It's an interesting group of players. Let's just put it that way. Offensively, there's really nobody that's stepped up and really taken control or taken command, is really having an outstanding season across the board. But you look at just the overall group, and they do have a nice group of players. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They have 10 guys with 5 or more home runs, which I believe is the biggest spread in baseball. So they're obviously doing enough to still have a pretty good record and be tied for first place in the Central. Getting back to Willie, I think anybody would say that, you're expecting a little bit more with the batting average, the on-base percentage. He's typically going to be a higher strikeout guy, but let's check back in and see what he looks like at the All-Star break. I would expect that average to start climbing a little bit. defensively he's been playing okay. It's just for me, it's a little bit hard to judge because of the time that he missed, and just wondering what those numbers would have been if he hadn't missed that chunk of time. So obviously still a pivotal player on the team, if not the most important player to the team. I would argue one of the two most important guys on the team, just for everything he does on the field and off. So I guess we'll just kind of keep an eye on how he does, and hopefully he starts turning it up a little bit across the board with the bat.
All right, I've gone quite a while without mentioning Lorenzo Cain, which might be a little unfair. The biggest story, I think, from the weekend, outside of the Brewers winning all three games, was Lorenzo Cain being designated for assignment on Saturday. He reached his 10 years of service time milestone, which is a big deal both financially and just, for a just bragging rights sort of thing. That's a really big deal for a Major League Baseball player, and the Brewers, it seemingly had an arrangement in place maybe for I would guess a little while. Okay, you get to 10 years, and it'll be time to part ways. And both sides seem to agree that that was a good course of action. He has struggled mightily this year, Lorenzo Cain has. He is, you read all the quotes. It sounds like, he sounded, I don't want to say defeated, but he sounded like he was sort of ready to be to be turn the page, to be done with his career. He would have been a free agent after this season anyway. When you saw though that it was going to happen right then and there at the 10-year mark, I guess it did still catch me a little by surprise how abrupt this was. There aren't a lot of center fielders out there. It's not like they had somebody to bring in that's, a surefire bet to do better than him. I don't want to shortchange Jonathan Davis from the minor leagues, but that was to me that it, to me it wasn't a surprise that it happened in the middle of the season. It was a surprise that it just was like there, 10 years, and that's it. So give me some thoughts on when you heard the news that Lorenzo Cain was moving on.
From a personal standpoint, kind of sad, to be honest. I've been doing this job long enough. You don't get, attached to players or anything like that. But when I look back on my career and, talk about service time, September, I'm going to be hitting the 30-year mark at the newspaper, believe it or not.
Woo
So obviously my pension will be much better than Lorenzo Cain's.
woo! I was just going to ask about the
Yeah.
pension perks.
Okay, joking there, of course. But he is easily in the top five of my all-time guys to interview and talk to. Just class, professional, fun, funny. And I tweeted yesterday, the day that he was DFA'd, that the clubhouse is just always a more fun place to be when he was in there. Always a smile on his face, just a great guy. And even going, I think I'm thinking back to spring training, going back to our initial discussions with him. He was already talking about retirement then, and then he hurts his knee right off the bat. And then as the weeks kind of went by, each time we would check back in with him, he just was not, I don't even know how to say it. Like, I don't want to say he was mentally checked out, but I think that the realization that, his time was coming fast was kind of setting in with him. And obviously the team was still doing okay with him. He still brought valuable assets to the table defensively in the clubhouse, that sort of thing. But the offense was just it was bad. There's no other way to put it. And kind of a sad ending to a guy who's been just a tremendous ball player over the course of his career. And I've seen people mentioning, oh, maybe he'd be a good pickup for a, playoff contending team. Well, there has to be interest on both sides. And honestly, like, I have a hard time thinking that Lorenzo Cain, even if somebody came calling, like, I don't know, the Yankees, and said, hey, we want to sign you, end it for the rest of the year, I honestly don't know if he would do it. I just think he's a guy who is happy with what he did. He should be happy with what he did, but it's time to move on to that next chapter. And start coaching his kids and being around those three boys. And that's a full-time job for him. He loves it and he wants to coach them and stuff. So more power to him. As far as the replacement, Jonathan Davis was the hot hand, kind of the hot guy swinging the hot bat down in Nashville. The first thing I thought of was, man, what a missed opportunity by Corey Ray. You can't help injuries and all that, but his numbers have been dreadful in the time that he's been healthy too. And guy that was on the 40 man, he was knocked off the 40 man, And you know, I think the Brewers and he both are kind of wondering, oh, what if, you know, he left-handed bat, he would have made total sense as the call up had he been putting up any numbers, but that's not in the cards. So Jonathan Davis gets the call, and we'll see what he can do.
The team quietly designated Ray for assignment earlier in the weekend, Friday, presumably is sort of maybe there's a connect, I'm assuming there's a connection into some of the moves. But you're right, there isn't an obvious, you know, an obvious center field candidate to replace him, and there aren't a lot of obvious center field like trade candidates or candidates anywhere. You know, like center field's a hard spot to fill, and I don't know what comes next for the Brewers at this position. We know Tyrone Taylor's there; he can play there. He is, you know, he's a center fielder. He's not at Lorenzo Cain's defensive level, but he's not bad, of course. And now Jonathan Davis. And I don't know what you think happens now. Is that a spot they address at the trade deadline? Do they try to ride this out? I mean, Tyrone Taylor, I think, deserves the opportunity to be kind of like the main guy, but he kind of already was. And I don't know if, I mean, Tyrone Taylor's not tearing the cover off the ball either. He's a little inconsistent. He has great weeks and, you know, then some tougher weeks. The last homestand was tough for him. So what do you think the Brewers do now at that spot? What's sort of the next move?
Yeah, I mean, I would fully expect them to be looking at all, any and all possibilities as for offensive additions to the lineup, and center field definitely would be among those, in my opinion. You know, you'd like to have a left-handed bat, add another left-handed swinger out there if you could. I don't know that Jonathan Davis is really going to be a, you know, any kind of long-term answer. And like you mentioned, Tyrone Taylor's had large chunks of time where he's been able to be out there, and I just don't know if he's up to par for, you know, what the Brewers are hoping for. He's a nice piece, but I don't think he's the answer out there right now. Now there's a possibility that he could go on a tear, and all of a sudden he is that guy. But like any other season with David Stearns at the helm here, I would expect that no stone will be left unturned with regard to what they can do to kind of tune up that offense and you know, improve at any area that they possibly can. And that would be one of the obvious ones to me is, you know, either adding another impact bat in center, or at least a left-handed hitting center fielder who can kind of join the mix.
Are you surprised looking back now that Lorenzo Cain came, even started the season? I mean, I guess he, I have to think, I mean, he knew where he was on the service time chain, and the Brewers knew where he was. I'm sure that factored somewhat into it. But, you know, knowing the timing, it's cool that the Brewers are able to kind of let him get to this point. But it also seems like it's possible that Lorenzo Cain could have just said, that's it, at the beginning of the season. Now that might not be fair to him because the 10-year thing is so valuable. But I guess there's a cynical way to look at it. Like, maybe we shouldn't have even started the season if he was gonna, you know, be in this place either physically or mentally or whatever, however you want to look at it. Looking back now, does it kind of surprise you that he came into the season, you know, ready to go and just decided maybe this was it didn't make this decision beforehand?
No, I don't. I'm not really surprised by that. I mean, the guy had one more year left on a contract that, let's be honest, is paying him pretty handsomely. So that would be tough to walk away from, number one. But number two, I think that, you know, the guy obviously has, you know, pride professionally, and he wanted to be able to come back and earn that money and be able to be a valuable contributor, you know, to a team that's looking for another playoff spot. So obviously it didn't work out. And both sides agreed and shook hands and were able to part ways amicably. Many people would argue that the Brewers waited too long to do that, but they did the classy thing in getting him to that 10-year mark, and now both sides can part ways and be happy. And the Brewers hopefully can get some production out of that spot, and Lorenzo Cain's free to do what he wants to do. So the only thing I can say and hope for is that he's a guy that makes his presence known from time to time in Milwaukee and comes back, and in whatever form or fashion, you know, if he's able to get on the Wall of Fame. I'm not quite sure what the, you know, how he stacks up with the qualifications, you know, in terms of the milestones you have to reach and everything, but he'll always have 2018. He always have the Gold Glove, and will always be remembered as a quality individual and a quality player. So best of luck to him, and we from a media standpoint, we're definitely going to miss working with him in the clubhouse.
I think at this point people are aware of how good he was in 2018. I mean, he was really, really special. Absolutely one of the reasons why the Brewers rally to win that division and go get within one game of the World Series. Tremendous defensively, like you said, that opening day catch in 2019 will live forever, among other home run thefts over the course of time. He is just short of the plate appearance tally. It's 2,000 plate appearances to make the Wall of Honor. He's got 1,800 plus. So I worry that he's going to now fall into like that sort of middle ground category, like CC Sabathia, not honored anywhere technically, but like they gotta find a way to honor him somehow. I mean, he was a really important piece for them. So that big contract that he signed the day that the Brewers traded for Christian Yelich as well, January 25th, 2018, big moment in Brewers history. So it's a bummer to see him go. The Brewers here moving on. Speaking of roster situations, an interesting one kind of brewing as it involves Pedro Severino. The Brewers are 12 games away from number 80 on the year, and that would mark the end of Pedro Severino's suspension. For those who may have forgotten about him, he was brought in as a backup catcher, offensive-minded catcher, I guess I would say, coming from Baltimore. Suspended for performance-enhancing drugs for 80 games. He's now doing some minor league, you know, I guess you'd call it a rehab start. I don't even know what the terminology is, but he's playing games in preparation, presumably, to be activated. Victor Caratini, who homered on Sunday, has been great. He is one of their best offensive players. He's not a full-time player, but he's very good. They're not sending him anywhere. And obviously, Omar Narvaez has also done fine for himself. They're not sending him anywhere. So I don't know what happens next. They've had him play first base. He's never played first base in the big leagues, but presumably you could get some at-bats there if maybe the team sends Keston Hira back down. So I don't know. Do you have any sense of what happens now when these next 12 games go by and Pedro Severino is suddenly eligible to come back to the Brewers?
That's a darn good question. I think the fact that he's trying some first base in the minor leagues is interesting and a possibility. One other thing to keep in mind is that Victor Caratini does have first base experience in the major leagues already. So there's another guy that you could potentially put into the mix there as well. And you know, obviously Rowdy Tellez is going to play the majority of time there, and we're just looking for places to get bats into the lineup. But you know, Caratini having gotten some experience there, I think definitely helps him as well. And with him switch hitting too. So I'll be interested to hear from Severino when he is eligible to come back and when he rejoins the Brewers. But, you know, you do have that kind of that logjam behind the plate. And I would argue the Brewers, David Stearns, did a really good job of working, you know, picking up the pieces on the fly after Severino was, you know, blindsided them with that PED suspension and going out and getting Caratini, who's been, you know, at the very least serviceable, if not above and beyond that behind the plate. And I would say playing more than probably most people expected. Obviously, Omar Narvaez had that COVID-19 bout that he dealt with too. But he, even when he's been healthy, Caratini's been getting more than his fair share of time behind the plate. So, you know, another guy to kind of fit in there and try to get time for. I'm glad I'm not Craig Counsell trying to juggle all this stuff and figure it out. But I guess it's a good problem to have, if nothing else, because Severino will give you a little bit of pop. And he was swinging the bat really well in spring training when he got pop for PEDs. So remains to be seen, but it'll be interesting when he is eligible to return.
What a job by Victor Caratini, imported just, you know, the day before the season starts on account of that suspension. And he's been great. He's been good with the pitching staff, of course, and offensively has really been a good contributor when he's in there, like you said, playing a lot more than people thought. You know, when Omar was out, he played every day behind the plate. Like, there was no break for that guy. And he's been one of the more valuable players. So, like you said, this is a tough one. Before we get to three up, three down, and our take of the week, and my interview with Vinny Rotino, I've got to ask you about really the main thing from this week. It's the City Connect jerseys, Todd. They were unveiled on Friday. Some powder blue Brew Crew jerseys. Kind of exciting stuff. And I have to know what you think about them, Todd. What is your reaction to the City Connect jerseys?
Personally, I was waiting to be more overwhelmed than I am. They're okay. I like the powder blue, getting that work back in. I think a lot of people probably missed the 414 in the hat, or maybe I'm in the minority. I don't know. But when I looked at it at first, it didn't dawn on me. And then I looked at it again, like, oh, okay, that's a nice touch.
I totally missed it. Completely whiffed on it. Yep, first time through. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, it's like the people who, went 40 years without realizing the MB logo, the glove logo for the Brewers. So,
Yep.
that's a nice touch. I like the grill patch on the sleeve, but overall, like kind of middle of the pack, I would say, in my opinion. Not as bad as some of those softball uniforms like the Cubs and the Dodgers have been wearing. I would say just based off of the little bit that I've seen and what I've looked at as far as the City Connect goes, I really like the Rockies City
Yeah, me
Connect.
too. Me
Those are
too.
pretty sweet and very unique. But again, it's just personal preference. So it's never a bad thing when you've got a new thing and you're creating a buzz among the fan base. And let's be honest, the whole reason that these are created in the first place is to make money and to sell merchandise. And I'm sure the team store has done a pretty brisk business. I was actually down there yesterday for something else at the ballpark, and there were quite a few cars lined up over by the team store. So I would imagine
Yeah.
that the cash registers have been ringing pretty steadily. So one of the things I'm looking forward to is when they actually do wear them for the first time. Jason Schauger, the equipment manager, is very, very prideful guy and takes a lot of he takes his job very seriously. So it's not just going to be the uniforms, but every little possible accoutrement is going to go with those uniforms, and it's going to match. I mean, jackets, we're talking ball bags, we're talking the stickers on the knobs of the bats, we're talking belts, all this stuff, batting gloves, like every possible thing that could match, he's going to match. So it's going to be pretty big league stuff when they're able to wear those, and we'll see how it all looks.
Yeah, those debut Friday against the Toronto Blue Jays. I am looking forward to seeing them. I think they're going to look really sharp in person. I do like them. I think they're very fun. I love powder blue. I love some of the you're talking about some of the other equipment. I love some of the merchandise that's available, not necessarily the jerseys themselves, but like the jacket that goes with it, or there's a lot of sort of offshoot stuff. I love that grill patch you mentioned. As far as I'm concerned, put it on every hat. Like, that's awesome. That's a perfect Brewers, a Brewers thing. That's sort of the new sort of invention through this process. I think it, for me, it's like watching, knowing that there's a twist ending coming to a major movie. You go in there and your mind is always working, thinking, what's it going to be? What's it going to be? What's it going to be? And all these other teams releasing these City Connect jerseys along the way. You know the Brewers are coming up soon. You're generating a lot of ideas in your head. And some of them are probably, way beyond what is going to actually happen, which is going to be a little simpler than you might expect, or a little just, more straightforward than you might expect. This was pretty straightforward. I do like it. I love that color, and I'm looking forward to seeing it again. I can understand if people maybe we're hoping for more. I don't know, more directly tied to the city of Milwaukee besides the 414 in the hat. But I think it's going to look really, really sharp. When they get out there on the diamond, it's going to look really, really good.
JR, just not to cut you off, but I was going to ask you your opinion. What do you think the best brewery uniforms are ever? Like, what's your favorite?
I love what the current models 2019 when they came out with that the four new looks. I loved them. I still love them. I think they look great. I really like the road jerseys especially, but in general, the pinstripes, all of it. I'm a huge fan of what they've done right now. They are in fact my favorites. But if we go back to 82, those powder blue jerseys, I like those too. I think they're cool. They have a little flair, a little obnoxiousness that I like, and it harkens back to a time when the Brewers were obviously very good. So yeah, I'm looking right now at a Harvey Keene bobblehead adorned in that powder blue. I love that stuff. So I'm cool with that as well.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I've said for a long time, in my opinion, I don't think it'll ever be changed until they come up with something that is better. But my favorites are the early 90s iteration. So my favorite all-time Brewer uniform is the road grays with the Milwaukee and script across the
Oh,
front,
yeah.
and then the home version of that, where it was the pinstripes with the Brewers and script across the chest.
Very
So,
clean look.
yeah, I have a couple of really cool pictures of Molitor and Yount and Gantner from that era, and to me that's like kind of like the wheelhouse of my fandom and all that kind of stuff. And those uniforms just for me popped. So I don't know if they'll ever come back in some sort of retro version, but every once in a great while I'll see somebody walking around the ballpark with one of those on, and I just kind of nod my head and I'm like, yep, that's the one for me. Those are my two favorites by far. And they were pretty good for that small stretch when they were wearing them. The 92 team was one of those teams that wore them, and they obviously fell just short of getting into the playoffs that year, but they were a fun team to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can picture Pat Listash in one of those. It's that early 90s. I agree. That is a good look. Mostly, I think like a lot of people, it's just those mid-90s jerseys that are probably my least favorite. But even those I didn't hate, I just associate them with a bad stretch of Brewers baseball. Most of the Brewers jerseys have been okay by me. I really like the current ones. The current ones definitely pop for me. All right, let's get to three up, three down. Looking at some of the more, you know, the minutia from the week, I will start, if you don't mind. Friday night, you know, Keston Hira, I feel like he's kind of always walking a tightrope of, and this is another case we mentioned, Pedro Severino. Like, I don't know if his roster spot is always cemented in stone. Like, there's always a chance he could go back down. He's still striking out just a ton. But then every now and then he comes up with a really huge play, a really huge hit. And in this case, Friday night, he finally took a left-hander deep. He has struggled mightily against left-handers in his career, but certainly this season it has been abysmal for a right-handed hitter, a true head-scratcher. But he gets a left-hander for a home run, a go-ahead home run. The Brewers win that game 5-4. Hira with the big hit. That game came down to the absolute wire. Like the last out by Boxberger, I think Joey Votto was at the plate to the warning track. It would have won the game if it had cleared the wall. But the Brewers hang on by the skin of their teeth. And Keston Hira comes up with a big hit. You just can't quit the guy. I mean, there's still some promise there and whatnot. And that was a big moment for him. So he's finally a little bit off the schneid with the left-handed situation.
Yeah, on my end, this goes all the way back to last Sunday, but Mark Mathias hitting his first career major league home run and then kind of morphing that into just the contributions the Brewers have gotten over the last several weeks from guys who, you know, no one, including me, ever expected to see on the big league roster, let alone making those contributions, guys like Jason Alexander and, you know, Trevor Kelly and Peter Sterzlecki and guys like that. Jason Alexander, did I say his name? I can't remember.
You did, yeah.
Okay, that's absolutely. Trevor Kelly. You know, so guys like that, you know, Jonathan Davis will be in that group here shortly. But guys that you know, kind of define the depth in an organization. And it happens every year. And we kind of look past guys in spring training, but they wind up getting opportunities because of injuries and whatnot, and are doing a pretty darn good job, I would say, overall. You know, so it's kind of cool to see guys seizing the opportunity and kind of making their mark and doing things that maybe people didn't expect. And then right at the top of that list, I think you'd put Hobie Milner, who's been lights out. It's just incredible how the guy gets guys out with the way he throws, you know, 88, 89, 90. He's like the new Suter in that regard, but is doing a tremendous job. And I would argue, aside from, you know, the back end of the bullpen with the big three, Hobie's far and away been the MVP of that bullpen. So, again, just kind of cool seeing guys stepping up and take advantage of opportunities and do a good job when their number's called.
Milner got a big out against Joey Votto on Sunday. Again, he got a credit for the save on Saturday night. Working more than an inning, he has been a huge. He and Trevor Gott, the two discoveries in the bullpen this year, who have kind of come from sort of a humble background to be major, major contributors. The Brewers definitely have gotten a lot out of him. I am going to go with a Thursday game against the Mets. Again, that series was okay. You go to New York against one of the best teams in the league. You split the first two, and the third one could have gone either way. That feels like kind of a win based on where the Brewers have been. But I got to ask you your thought. I know you weren't in New York, but you were probably watching this after the fact. There's this Jason Lane sends Hunter Renfroe around third on a Tyrone Taylor double in the ninth inning. Would have scored the tying run. He's thrown out. It wasn't a great relay throw. He's still thrown out pretty handily. So on the one hand, it might look like an aggressive, overly aggressive send. You know, on the other hand, the Brewers just, you know, strike out a lot. And Christian Yelich did strike out next. And, you know, like, I don't know if you guaranteed to get another opportunity. So what did you think, Todd? Did you think that was too aggressive a send, or did you agree with it in the moment?
100% on board. I mean, with the send in that situation, Edwin Diaz on the mound, nasty strikeout stuff, like you mentioned, Christian Yelich, you know, up next. I just feel like everything has to go. You put the pressure on the defense to make the plays, and they did. And, you know, even Hunter Renfroe made a pretty good slide considering, you know, it could have been probably a little bit closer, but, you know, there's a lot of people I understand that come down on the other side of the coin. But to me, you got to be aggressive in that situation. Jason Lane was, and you live with the decisions. There's been several others that I can remember where he's been overly aggressive, and it's worked out in the Brewers' favor. Granted, not, you know, in those types of situations with game on the line, but still some pretty important situations. So did not have a problem with that at all, and just didn't work out in the Brewers' favor.
All right, do you have a number two for three up, three down?
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Well, you mentioned in early 92, you mentioned that those Brewers teams, Phil Garner, of course, manager of those teams, and we finally got Craig Counsell to a place where he could pass Phil Garner for the all-time winningest manager in Brewers history. It took way longer than people thought once they got up to the precipice of that record. But on Wednesday, the Brewers win convincingly at Citi Field. They beat the Mets 10-2, and Craig Counsell became the all-time winningest manager in Brewers history. He's added three on to that mark since then. It had to feel good. I mean, Craig Counsell deflects all the credit in the world to his players, his staff, and that's fine and well and good and understandable. But he's been awesome. I mean, there's no other way to put it. This is a golden era of Brewers baseball, and he has been at the helm, so he is deserving for sure of the mark. Achieved it in about 100 fewer games than what Phil Garner did. So pretty cool stuff, and a cool honor for Craig Counsell.
Yeah, again, kind of bouncing off of that. That was a fun story for me to write when I did. And we published it several weeks before he actually did break the record, not knowing what was going, you know, obviously when it was going to happen. But being able to talk to the people that I did for the story, most notably Doug Melvin and Craig Counsell's dad, John, was a lot of fun in getting their perspective. And then trying to get Craig to talk about it before it actually happened was quite the effort. I was told before the interview was okayed that not to expect much from him in the way of quotes or whatever you want to call it or thoughts about it. But he did. He gave me enough that I was able to put together a decent story with some of his thoughts included in there. So I did appreciate that, but big milestone now out of the way. And, it looks like if he continues along the path that he's on, he should get over that 700 hump, I would think, this season. And
yeah,
and then we'll see how long he goes and where he goes from there. But certainly one of the best baseball minds right now in the major leagues, and a guy who's just a perfect fit as a Brewers manager in so many ways.
A couple more before we move on to remember when Rowdy Tellez had a rough day in the field Thursday, a couple of misplays that one error and one, you know, just kind of awkward play that helped the Mets score a go ahead run. But then on Friday, he comes back and makes a sweet play and slings the ball over to the pitcher covering at first base. Also, I love it when Rowdy Tellez scores from first base on a hit, which is what happened on Saturday. So that always makes me smile. I love seeing Rowdy do well on things other than just mashing the ball. So that was the case. Also, Brewers do get pretty good news for now with Aaron Ashby, who left the game his last start with forearm tightness. That's usually code for an injury that might be Tommy John. Like those are words you do not want to hear. Mm-hmm. But the Brewers sort of afterwards were like, ah, it's just fatigue, arm fatigue. He's doing okay. He is scheduled to make his next start. There's no added pain the next day. So huge, huge sigh of relief for the Brewers. Honestly, when he left that game, it was like, I was fearing the worst. You know, you just don't hear forearm tightness, and then afterwards it's like, it's probably fine. Yet it just does not happen that way. So Brewers got lucky there.
I was going to say, I mean, that's the same thing. Anybody who's watched baseball for any amount of time, when you hear anything regarding forearm, that's, yeah, you start getting real nervous real fast. And then you're talking about the Brewers' best pitcher, best young pitcher, pitching prospect, if you want to call him that. Certainly a guy that's been valuable in a number of different roles this season. He's in the rotation right now, but a guy that's pitched some valuable innings out of the bullpen as well, and is also, you know, considered one of those future building blocks for the rotation. Certainly don't want him undergoing the knife anytime soon. So we'll see how he looks when he's able to take the mound again on Tuesday, but hopefully a bullet avoided there.
Yeah, Brewers have gotten either good fortune or whether it's their medical staff have avoided those major arm injuries for most of their keystone starting pitchers over the last many years. But that would have been a major, major blow for both now and the future. All right, let's go to Remember When. We're going back to the 70s, Todd. You like the 70s, right? You had a good time in the 70s.
Yeah, I was born in the 70s, dude.
Yes, yes. In the vein of jerseys, since we were talking about the City Connect jerseys, I wanted to point to June 12th, 1977, when the Brewers played the Kansas City Royals at County Stadium. It was a Sunday, and the clubhouse manager came to the stadium at 9:30 in the morning to check things out, and the lock was busted to the door, and all the Royals jerseys were gone. Their gloves were gone. A lot of stuff was gone. Pants were gone. Warm-up jackets. Hats. 52 of the 60 jerseys were stolen. The Royals had to borrow the Brewers' jerseys to get through the rest of this series. And fortunately, I guess fortunately, or maybe it didn't even matter, but the Royals wore a powder blue, so this worked out for them a little bit. They wore the Brewers' powder blue jerseys. Not everyone did. Some guys just still had their Royals jerseys. George Brett had his jersey. Jim Colborn, who pitched that day, a former Brewer, still had his. Daryl Porter, a former Brewer, still had his, oddly enough, but a lot of guys had to wear Brewers road jerseys. So it was Brewers versus Brewers everywhere you looked. It's funny because it was estimated at $3,500 stolen. Today it would have been like, I don't know, $1 million. I mean, that's overstating it, but like that is not how much the equipment is worth today. Somebody just straight up broke in, and it ended up the Brewers won that game 4-0. You had like three guys wearing number 5 on the field, because you had George Brett, Jamie Quirk was wearing his normal jersey, and then Hal McRae was wearing Jamie Quirk's road jersey. So it was really just kind of a funny, I guess not haha situation. It was just weird at the time. I don't think they ever caught the person who did it. There's never a report of them busting or finding any of the merchandise. It wasn't obviously going to be easy to move, because people would be looking for, you know, MLB level quality jerseys, Royals jerseys in the Milwaukee market or beyond, and I don't think anybody ever found them. So it's a mystery to this day. Speaking of City Connects, that was certainly everybody was feeling Milwaukee that day, as it was Brewers against Brewers. Really the Royals. Just a fun moment from June 12th, 1977. All right, Todd, let's wrap this up before I get to my interview with Vinny Rotino. It is Todd's take of the week.
Ryan Braun sends it for center and deep.
JR, I'm going to go back to that stolen uniform thing. I'm going to break some news here. Since the statute of limitations has expired, it was actually a 6-year-old me who stole all those uniforms.
Oh, my gosh. Todd, how dare you?
They're all in my basement right now. I alternate and I wear them around when I'm not working.
That is so, a crafty. You were a crafty 6-year-old. I mean, that's that takes some, you know, some chutzpah. That's incredible.
Really was. I grew up in Bayview, so I was able to ride my bike down there and training wheels and all, and I stole them. So,
well, now the world knows. A major mystery, a major cold case has been solved. And what are they going to do about it? I'm sure statute of limitations, right? That's stuff that's like 5 years. So.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, I kid. Just making a joke. Anyway,
people really thought you were behind it, 6-year-old.
You never know. You never know.
You probably don't.
Covering my bases, but yeah, I mean, looking ahead to this week, obviously it's a big week. 4 games against the Cardinals. You've got the Toronto Blue Jays coming in, so you've got a couple of really nice measuring sticks. And One of the knocks in the Brewers this season has been, yeah, they've been beating all the bad teams, but have not done much against the good teams. So they're going to get their chance, and playing them at home obviously is a bonus. And then you've got some pretty darn good players coming in as well. I mean, Babe Goldschmidt has been swinging it as well as anybody in the majors. Arenado has always been a thorn in the Brewers' side. You know, Tommy Edman is kind of becoming one of those guys, almost the David Freese of today's Cardinals. So plenty of talent offensively for the Cardinals coming in. And I'm anxious to see Vlad Jr. come in. First time I'll have seen him in person. A lot of offensive talent on the Blue Jays as well. So should be a couple of good series. I would expect Josh Hader back any day. Obviously, that's going to be big for the bullpen. And things will kind of slop back into normal there. So it's going to be a good week, I think, for fans. A lot of entertaining games, and we'll see where the Brewers stand, especially in the Central after Thursday is completed.
Kicks off with a bang on Monday. Like I said, Miles Mikolas, who was one out away from a no-hitter, a fly ball to center that turned into a ground rule double with two outs in the ninth. He's going up against Corbin Burnes on Monday at American Family Field. The Brewers have been gone for a long time. Like you said, that three-city road trip, third three-city road trip in a row It's going to be a fun four-game series, followed by the Blue Jays. That's going to be a lot going on. City Connect jerseys showing up on Friday night. Todd, thanks for joining us, man. We will chat with you again. We will chat with you again next week. Enjoy the games this week.
JR, always a pleasure.
the dramatic pause is what gets me, I think. On always a pleasure. Thanks thanks for Todd joining in. You can find everything he has at jsonline.com. Now, we move to my interview with Vinny Rotino. He is he's on Valley Sports Wisconsin pregame, postgame. You know him there. You know him as a former Brewer, maybe as a former Racine St. Catherine star. We talked about the draft a little bit. That's still a month away, but he went undrafted. So we talked about both his story and just what he has seen a little bit from scouting some of the guys around Wisconsin, and also went back to 2007 a little bit. Got some council stories, some Prince Fielder stories. So you may enjoy this. Here is my chat with Vinny Rotino. Thanks for tuning in to Microbrew this week. We'll chat with you again next week. My guest is Vinny Rotino. You may know him as a former Racine St. Catherine star, Milwaukee Brewers player, and certainly you'd know him from watching the Valley Sports Wisconsin coverage of the Milwaukee Brewers, pregame, postgame host. This is Vinny's second year in that group, and I'm going to start there. I'm going to start with how you got connected with Valley Sports Wisconsin. Obviously, you have a relationship with the Brewers franchise, where you made your Major League debut. I think you were doing some scouting before this for some other organizations, so I'm just kind of curious how this opportunity came about and who brought you here.
Yeah, JR, no, thanks for having me on. First of all, it's always a pleasure. Love talking baseball, love talking Brewers and stuff. But yeah, how that all came about for me. So I got done playing in 2016, and then I transitioned right into scouting. I scouted actually for the Texas Rangers, and I was a pro scout. So one of my colleagues was Mike Anderson, brother of the voice of the Brewers, Brian Anderson.
Sure.
And so, as I continued to scouted for 4 years, and I loved it. I was pretty good at it. And I was kind of forced to make a transition just from a family perspective. I have three young daughters, my wife, you know, three young daughters, like at home. I was on the road constantly. So I always was kind of like one foot out the door a little bit with scouting, just because I didn't think it was sustainable. So Brian, got to be friends with him through his brother, Mike. And he kind of told me that I would be pretty good at the broadcast side of things on the broadcast side of things for baseball. And I actually didn't think I would be. turns out I don't think I was at the beginning, and I think I'm getting better at it. So anyway, I've been doing this for a couple of years. I absolutely have a blast doing it, working with guys like Craig Kashan, and working with guys obviously like Brian Anderson and Rock and Tim Dillard, and it's just been an absolute blast. I love doing it.
What else do you do? Because I know you do a little stuff with PBR, which is kind of a Wisconsin, I don't know, scouting service might be sort of the wrong way to look at it, but like what there's more to it than just the Valley Sports thing that you're involved with.
Yeah, for sure. So I would love for broadcasting to be the only thing I had to do. obviously it's kind of a side gig at this point, but hopefully it transitions into something a little bit bigger. But yeah, it's so I my other job, my more full-time job is with PBR. It's Prep Baseball Report. I am the Wisconsin scouting director. So essentially it is like a scouting service. So we pretty much rank all the players in Wisconsin, all the high school players, I mean, all the way from freshman year all the way to senior in high school, we're ranking those players. We're putting our grading system on them. And anytime a college wants to take a look at some of the players, they can go right on the website and view some of these guys. It's a really cool company, and I love the job as well. It's an opportunity for players around the state to get that light shined on them. Whereas in the past when I played, my goodness, there was like maybe three guys that would go on to play Division I baseball in the entire state in each class. And now it's like 40 guys, right? So I think there's like over 40 D1 commits in this class of 2022. So in the 2023 class looks even more talented. So it's cool. I like that part of that job.
Yeah, you probably know this as well as anybody, because I'm trying to think of the guys from Wisconsin that were around when you played pro baseball. I think Eric Hinsky's career is probably wrapped up by that point, but then there's Jordan Zimmerman, and I don't know, maybe that's it. Like now it's Kelenic and Lux and Dalton Varsho, and that's just the Danny Jansen. That's just the front wave. You know, you've got
Owen
some
Miller,
guys behind him.
Right?
Owen Miller, right? Yeah. I mean, I can't even name them all. So yeah, you probably see this as well as anybody. And you think that's going to be sustained, huh? That there will be, you know, more Wisconsin guys funneling in as good as these guys.
There's a pipeline of Wisconsin players joining the crop of the most talented players in all of the country. And they're getting drafted at the high end of the draft, like Owen Miller, Jared Kelenic. There's a kid out of Arkansas this year, left-handed pitcher, who's going to go very, very high. Yeah, absolutely. There's athletes here in the state of Wisconsin, right? So it's just a matter of getting them the right amount of exposure for one, but also all the way through getting them in front of or playing against the best competition in the country. And now that's happening with all these different facilities that are popping up all over the state. There might be more facilities in the state of Wisconsin, like big time facilities where kids can go in the winter and train than anywhere in the country. I mean, there's like seven of them right around here in southeastern Wisconsin, huge hitting facilities. So it's a really cool thing. Players are getting exposed. Players are able to compete against the best players in the country and really develop their games here in the state of Wisconsin, cold weather state, something you would never have thought could happen before.
So you didn't have any facilities like that when you were coming up through St. Catharines
lacrosse? We hit in a garage that you would get, if it rained, you would wear like rain gear, like indoors. It was, but there's an element too of the Michael Phelps thing, right? Where he said that he trained at this crappy YMCA, and that's why he was one of the best, you know, obviously the best swimmer of all time.
Sure.
Because he learned how to be gritty and resilient and all that. So there's an element of that too. So that I grew up with, but no, it's really cool with all the facilities around.
Connor Prelip, I think, is the name of the guy that I know who's going to be
right
in this year's draft. I'm trying to remember if he's Toma pitching. I think he pitched for Alabama, had some arm injuries, so I don't know for sure how high he'll go. But yeah, Wisconsin guys pretty much first, second round, pretty much every year. I mean, even you had AJ yep. Vukovic during the pandemic
right.
season even. So it's definitely heady times for Wisconsin baseball. I'm curious about your own draft day experience because, you know, you went undrafted, but I think a lot of people know that you went to UW lacrosse, and I don't know how much you expected to hear your name during that. I don't remember then if that was like a 3-day festival or like what the format was at the time, but was there disappointment? Were you able to latch on pretty quickly after that? Like, what was the process for you?
Yeah, no. So my road to the major leagues was a very long and windy road with a lot of setbacks. So yeah, I was All-American at UW lacrosse. I was runner-up to player of the year. I performed very, very well. I not only performed well, but I had the tools to play professional baseball. Again, just wasn't playing against the best competition. There were some doubters whether or not, you know, a Division III player can transition into professional baseball. I think that was kind of the main reason why I did not get drafted. I was told I was going to get drafted though by a couple of scouts. They said that they were going to put my name in for the draft, and didn't happen. Very disappointed, obviously. So I went on to pharmacy school at UW-Madison. I went for one semester, and the entire time I was wanting to play baseball still. So I actually had a couple of tryouts that were set up in Arizona. One was with the Brewers, one was with the Padres, Rockies, and White Sox. Those were the four tryouts I had set up. And then I quit pharmacy school, and without knowing whether or not I'd get signed. They were just tryouts. And then I went, flew down, stayed with a buddy, slept on his couch, and I had a phenomenal showing with the Brewers. Rick Wilson was running. He was the West Coast cross checker at the time. He was running this camp. It was basically a 1-day trial where I'm playing and running the 60, and I'm getting some at bats against some players that had already gotten released and were playing independent ball. And so they also come down to the tryout. Well, I'm the best player at the tryout. And I told Rick Wilson, I said, look, all these guys already had their shot. I deserve a shot too. And he said, you know what? You're right. And so he's the one that got me the invite to spring training. Well, lo and behold, I was awful in that first spring training, and I almost got released in the first couple of weeks. Jim Scalen and Eddie Cedar, the story is they went to bat for me in the meetings not to release me and to keep me around in extended spring training. And so there I just kind of practiced every day. I dragged a bucket of balls out at 6 a.m. You know, I just changed my swing a little bit. And then I ended up, you know, performing at Helena. And then I was the minor league player of the year in Beloit that following year. And then I made it to the big leagues a couple of years later. So that was my road to the big leagues. And it was fun. And it was, I don't know. I loved every minute that I played baseball. I just thought it was the coolest thing to put that jersey on. I felt really lucky to do so.
Okay, so you make your way up the Brewers ladder, and then my understanding is 2007, you were very close to making the Brewers out of spring training, that you were one of the last guys that ultimately got cut. Did it feel like you were going to make that opening day roster, or what was that whole thing like?
So back in 2007, there was a 25-man roster. Nowadays, there's a 26-man roster. But back in that day, in 2007, 25, they took 26 guys on the plane. It was between me and Tony Gwynn. Everyone else had a guaranteed contract or a guaranteed spot on the team except me and Tony Gwynn. They waited until the last like 10 minutes before they had to submit the roster to Major League Baseball, and we still didn't know. I get a tap on the shoulder and said, "Hey, Skip wants to see you." So I went in. Ned Yost told me I was going down to Nashville, and it's a little fuzzy at this point as to what was said, because I was a little bit like shocked. I had a nameplate. I had a locker. It said Vinny Rutino. I think I was number 8. I was number 8 before Ryan Braun, actually. And so he tapped me on the shoulder. He's, you know, they gave me the whole spiel. Hey, we want you to continue to develop, blah, blah, blah. But I want to say that, again, the memory is a little fuzzy, that they had a coin flip to determine who was going to make the team, me or Tony Gwynn. But, you know, so it was Tony. He played great up there that year. They probably made the right choice. I ended up getting back up in September though. So that was obviously a thrill.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that, because it's funny that it's you and Tony Gwynn, because you have starring roles in a game that is very underrated, I think, in Brewers history, but for me personally was a big deal, at least. And in 2007, the Brewers had not had a winning season since 1992. They had gone 500 even in 2005. And in 2007, they had, it was a great season for most of the year, kind of fizzled out over the course of the season. And then in September, it's no longer a certainty that the Brewers are even going to finish above 500. It had looked like a sure thing. They had to win one of their last two games against the San Diego Padres, a team that was fighting for a playoff spot, for control of the NL West. And you get into this penultimate game of the season, and Trevor Hoffman's on the mound. It's looking like it's a done deal. Trevor Hoffman ends up facing Tony Gwynn Jr. Gwynn Jr. hits, might have been a triple. It was an extra triple to tie the game against a guy. You know, Tony Gwynn Jr., of course, had grown up in the Padres clubhouse, knew Trevor Hoffman very well, like a, you know, almost like a big brother, father figure. And he gets the hit with two outs to tie the game. And then you, Vinny Rutino, come up in extra innings and get the game-winning walk-off single. The Brewers win that game. They clinch in that game their first winning season in 1992. They do end up winning the next day, really through the Padres, actually. The Padres had to end up in a one-game playoff that they lost to the Rockies, so it was huge. Two losses for the Padres, but I don't know if you think about that game at all. I mean, I obviously, you didn't have an opportunity to have a lot of at-bats with the Brewers, but and I'm sure that one is a big one, hitting a walk-off hit, but I don't know if it landed with the Brewers then. If that was a momentous moment, there are certainly, I'm sure, a lot of fans like me who are thinking, finally, the Brewers have a winning season. What do you think about when you think about that moment?
Yeah, no, it was kind of, it was cool, right? I mean, it was an opportunity to help my hometown team that I grew up loving. I loved the Brewers. I still love the Brewers, right? Even when I left the Brewers and played for teams like the Mets and the Marlins, I still was a Brewer fan, right? And the opportunity to get that game-winning hit to push them over the edge to get to that, you know, 500 season or better than 500 season. That's crazy to think about that it was that long of a drought. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a done deal that was going to happen that season, right? And so for the opportunity to get that, it felt a little bit like the playoffs. And for me to get that hit, again, after the long road in baseball that I took up to that point, it was cool. It was really cool. I had the whole thing where at that time it was untuck your shirts, right? And so everyone came out and kind of gathered around and was untucking my shirt. And it was really cool. It was a great moment. and one of the moments that I'll never forget in my career.
15-year anniversary of that season. One of the, you could argue, the start of something for Milwaukee Brewers baseball. Of course, they end their playoff drought the next year in 2008. I assume you remember who you got that hit in 2007 off of, correct?
Yeah, it was Thatcher, Joe
yes,
Thatcher.
Your yep, minor league teammate that year.
The reason why I got the hit off of him because I knew exactly what pitch was coming. It was going to be a cutter. I called that exact pitch for him every single time a right-handed sure. hitter would come up. And he would eat right-handed hitters alive with that cutter. And so I was just looking to get the head out. I knew wherever he started that pitch, that's not where it was going to end up. I just totally cheated for that ball and ended up shooting a base hit into left field in that five hole.
Yeah, underselling it, I guess, as your minor league teammate earlier that year, but you were his catcher. You were part of the same yeah. battery. So that's really funny that you knew exactly what was coming. I'll ask you another sort of miniature trivia question, which I'm guessing you know the answer to. But in 2008, you get one at-bat, your last at-bat with the Brewers. Do you remember who you were pinch hitting for in that 2008 at-bat?
Oh, boy.
It's someone you work with now.
Was it Dillard?
It was Tim Dillard.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. Okay. That's yeah. a great piece of trivia. I'm going to have to tell him that.
I did not know if you would recall that, but I did see that and had to smile. Two guys that I see on my TV now if I'm watching a Brewers broadcast in 2008. So that was it for the Brewers, and I know you spent time with a couple other teams after that, and it's cool that you've made it back here. I wanted to get your thoughts on the current team because as we record this, it's Tuesday night. The Brewers have just been shut out by the Mets. It's been a very tough stretch, just coming off this 8-game losing streak, and I think it's 11 of 13 now. I think one of the big criticisms I think you probably would hear is that even if this team were to sort of work things out, especially on offense, they still maybe don't have the punch. An improvement in what they had last year. Last year, they went into the playoffs without having that offensive punch, and it sort of bore out that they weren't able to, you know, to beat the Atlanta Braves. I don't know if this team necessarily has shown that they're another level above that. So I guess I'm just looking for a, you know, sort of a carte blanche evaluation of what you think of this Brewers team, and if you think that they do have an extra gear that we just haven't seen yet, or how you would, you know, how would you respond when someone says, I don't know if this person could do it in the postseason.
Well, here's the thing about this team and about just the stretch that they're on. Okay, so they started off with the best record in franchise history, 50 games in franchise history, 32-18. That's quite a remarkable record considering that their offense, I agree, has been kind of sputtering all year. They've shown flashes where they can score runs, but on the whole, their offense just it doesn't seem to be super consistent. They're kind of relying on the home run. We've seen that from them in the past. Whenever there's a really good quality starting pitcher on the mound, they just kind of get shut down and a bunch of empty at bats. But they are built on run prevention. And I'll just continue to say this narrative over and over because it is how they're going to win. It's how they're going to bounce back. They're built on run prevention. Now they lose two of their Cy Young type starting pitchers in Brandon Woodruff somehow he got a high ankle sprain. And then you lose Freddie Peralta to that shoulder injury, which he should come back in September, not counting on him to do much in September. But what you should get is production and quality innings from, you know, Corbin Burnes, which you're getting that from him. You're getting that from Eric Lauer, although he has struggled a bit in the last couple outings. Brandon Woodruff should come back strong. I mean, it's a finger thing. It seems like it's working itself out. He had some very positive progress today to report on. And then you have guys like Aaron Ashby, who seems to be like a rising star, and then Jason Alexander, who seems to be a nice back end rotation piece. Once they get Brandon Woodruff back, I hope what the team does is stick with that 6-man rotation, because I think that worked. I think that worked to keep guys fresh. I think that worked to keep guys not only fresh, but effective and very impactful, right? So I think that when you're fresh, you can have better command of your stuff. You're not trying to do a little bit extra because maybe your arm hasn't bounced back totally from that stressful outing the time before. So I think that was innovative to go to that 6-man rotation. I hope they go back to that. I think that's going to be very positive for their rotation. Now, with that said, if you get that version back of their starting rotation, they shouldn't go on these types of losing stretches. They should be able to split series or, you know, eke out a 2 out of 3. And that's what we saw from them last year. Now, in regards to the offense, I think we just need production and consistent production from their main guys. And that's it. And they should get that, because we saw that already this year at times from Hunter Renfro. Then he got hurt. Willie Adames has been very impactful. Then he got hurt. And then Rowdy Tellez as well. I think those three main guys, and then if they hit, then the rest of them hit, right? Because it puts a lot of pressure on the opposing staff. So I know that that's like a lot of what if scenarios for this team to get back, but we saw this already this year, and that's why I'm hopeful.
Sure. So the Brewers are in this place where they're kind of stuck with Craig Counsell, just on the precipice of becoming the all-time winningest manager. And you know that by the time this hears, you know, people are hearing this, I'm sure he'll have passed it, and this will all be in the rearview mirror. Did you have any interactions with Craig Counsell? You know, you came up right around the time of the end of his career, and you were playing some of the same positions. Yeah. So did you have any interactions or any fun stories with him?
I mean, yeah, Counts and I used to go to the horse track together in spring
That's
training.
Incredible.
Yeah. You know, what was that place called? Turf Paradise. We would go and just watch the horses run, you know, every once in a while. That was a lot of fun. Great guy, obviously, incredibly competitive, incredibly smart, does a phenomenal job with getting these guys to understand that it is about the team and about team winning. He just builds a phenomenal culture. You could sense that from him as a player. Just has just a ton of feel. I mean, this guy coaches his daughter's basketball team and cuts his own grass. Like, we've heard all these stories. He's one of us, right? He's a right. Wisconsin guy with a ton of feel that's managing a world-class baseball team. He doesn't overcomplicate it, the Brewers are lucky to have him. He's the best manager in baseball.
And then last question before I let you go, Prince Fielder is another guy I want to know about, if you've had any interactions with him coming up through the system. He'll be going into the Walk of Fame in August, rightfully so, as part of you know, one of the greatest players in Brewers history. Do you have any stories from your interactions with him as a player?
So him and Corey Hart are my two favorite players of all time.
Cool.
Okay. Corey, just a phenomenal guy with five tools, and he was just so fun to watch and such a humble person. And then Prince, people in the media and on, you know, when you watch a guy like Prince, if you got a chance to know him, he was such a fun loving guy. He was just a fun loving guy, and he was so funny. I can't even describe to you I would be rolling as to the things that he would say in the clubhouse, and you just don't get a chance to see that because he was quiet in front of the camera. He was a more reserved guy in the media, but he was tied for my favorite player of all time, not only because of that, but also because he played extremely hard. I don't know if you remember, he would hit a ground ball to the pitcher and he would run as hard as he could to first base. You just don't see that anymore, especially from a guy like a superstar like him hitting 50 home runs. And when your superstar is also a grinder that wants to win, that sets the tone for the entire team. And he did that. And I just always admired that about him. And that's why he's my second or one of two favorite players of all time.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Prince Fielder come back later this summer. I'm sure a lot of other Brewers luminaries will be back as well. He is Vinny Rotino. If you watch a Brewers game, you're going to see him. You're going to hear him. He's on pregame, postgame for Bally Sports Wisconsin. He's following everything that's going on in Wisconsin baseball. So the draft coming up here is going to be a big moment for him. Thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate it. Talk to you again, hopefully sometime down the road.
Thanks, JR. Yeah, anytime.